from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support from listeners like you. And from the Palladium at the Center for the Performing Arts, opening in January 2011.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll find out about Jamaica Farewell at the Fringe.
I'll take a look at the Indiana Experience at the Indiana History Center.
And I'll get a preview of the Flower and Patio Show. Plus, there's our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Based on her true life story, Deborah Earhart's Jamaica Farewell tells the journey she took to escape revolution-torn Jamaica in the 1970s. Left to her own devices, she risked prison time and even death in her attempt to pull off a daring and dangerous caper. With the unwitting help of an infatuated American CIA agent, she realized her lifelong dream of starting over in America. And now she tells all in her one-woman show. Travis DiNicola spoke with Deborah and Indie Fringe director Pauline Moffitt to find out more.
Pauline, Deborah, welcome to Art of the Matter. Great to have you both here today.
Thank you.
Let's start with Pauline. I just want to congratulate you on continuing to expand the Indie Fringe building over on East St. Clair Street and what you're doing over there. You got some new lights, I hear.
Well, we did, yes. We've been doing a great training program over the last 5 years. And, you know, for the young technicians, and we were rewarded with a wonderful grant of $16,000 for the latest LED computerized lighting system. And we had it installed so that Jamaica Farewell would look absolutely amazing under the new lights.
That's great.
And we're thrilled to bits. I mean, it really does elevate the theatre.
Well, it's also really fantastic that you're continuing to be able to have theater year-round in addition to the Fringe Festival itself, which, of course, takes place in August. But pretty much it seems like almost every weekend there's something going on down at the Fringe Theater building.
I have to say the only month we're not booked is October. Look, there's a lot happening. We've had a lot of visits. We're having Fill the Void is coming back. Galileo with that wonderful Tim Hardy, the Shakespearean actor. He will be appearing in April. Married to Magic, which was another Fringe favourite, are coming back at
lots
the end
of, fun.
Of May. Mm-hmm. So people are saying, well, yes, let's go and have some fun at the Fringe building and keep in touch with our Fringe supporters year-round rather than just at the festival.
Excellent. And one of the shows that's, in fact, it's already opened. It's been playing. I appreciate you coming in. Deborah, Jamaica Farewell. This is a one-woman show, very autobiographical, and it just sounds like an amazing story. So where do we start?
Well, first of all, I'm very excited to be here. This is my first time in Indianapolis, and I'm very happy to be here performing the show. I wrote Jamaica Farewell a little over 3 years ago, and I've had an off-Broadway run with it, and it's been actually touring the world, so it's very exciting to be here. It's actually based on my story about how I got out of Jamaica during a political revolution with the help of an unwitting CIA agent. You know, a lot of people...
And you're not making this up.
No, I'm not making this up. It's an amazing story. You know, it happened when I was 17 years old, and of course that was a little over 20 years ago, and I wouldn't be able to do that now. When you're 17, you think you're invincible, you know. But a lot of people don't realize that people from third world countries, they dream about coming to the United States because of all the opportunities that we hear about in America. But most of us can't come here. It's just not going to happen because, you know, of all the rules and regulations and, you know, the papers that you have to bring down to the American embassy. Most of us can't come. So the fact that I'm here is just, I mean, I'm just very excited. And America has lived up to everything that I thought it was.
Well, that's good news. Tell me about what was happening in Jamaica at the time that you had to leave.
Well, there were We had just had a new prime minister who was turning the country toward democratic socialism, and he was kind of aligning himself with Fidel Castro, and people were just afraid that the country was going to turn communist. So all of a sudden, everybody was just piling and leaving out of Jamaica, those who could leave and come to America. So it was a tough time because it was draining the island economically, and you know, people were nervous, and of course the United States was also nervous because they didn't want to have two communist countries in its backyard. It never did go communist, but it was a rough time for Jamaica's period, and the story takes place during that period.
But how long did that period last? And I forgive me for my ignorance of this time period in Jamaica's history. But
it started in the 70s and went on to about 1984.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the mid-80s, I would say.
That there was a lot of turmoil there.
It was a lot of turmoil because people were just nervous and afraid. And then you had all the people who had the money, and the educated people were leaving just in droves. So it was very scary, you know, and our dollar got devalued, and you know, it was just a rough time in history. But now, you know, things are a lot different. I didn't go back to Jamaica for a little while, but now I go back three times a year. So things have calmed down, and it's a beautiful place. But America is now my home.
At what point did you decide to write Jamaica Farewell?
When I thought I wouldn't get thrown in jail. When I thought the statutes of limitations had passed and, you know, I wouldn't get thrown in jail because...
Seriously?
You know, seriously.
Yeah.
You know, what I did was not, you know, 100% legal. You know, like I said, I was 17 years old and I had a dream and I thought I was invincible. And I nearly ended up being raped and killed and just got out by the skin of my teeth. So it's quite an amazing story. You know, when I think about it now, over 20 years later, I still can't believe how dumb I was. You know, but I was 17. So, you know, I think maybe a lot of 17-year-olds, you know, can relate to that part of the story.
Well, let me ask you this, because I know certainly to get the full story, you need to come down the fringe and hear your performance and see your performance of Jamaica Farewell. But what was it? I just want to be clear. What was it that was illegal about what you were doing at the time?
Well, you're going to have to come down to the Fringe Theater this weekend on Friday night at 8 o'clock, Saturday night at 8, and we have a show on Sunday, and we're going to be here for two more weekends. So if you want to hear the whole story, you've got to come on down, and I promise you, it's going to be better than any movie that you can see right now.
well, fair enough.
And in fact, Trevor,
yes?
The play has been optioned for a movie because the story is so great.
Wow.
Yes, it's very exciting. Mm-hmm. I was doing the play in Santa Monica in California, and two top producers walked in, and I about fainted. And my agent got a call the following day, and it has been optioned to go onto the big screen. So you want to come down and see it before you see it in the movie theater, and you want to come and get my autograph.
Well, that's absolutely fantastic. You've had a great run with this. As you said, it's been off-Broadway. You've performed it in California, all around the country now as well.
Yes,
right?
I've been performing it all around the United States, and I just got back from, it's been in London, Canada, Bermuda, and I just got back from performing in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very exciting.
How did you find out about our Fringe Festival here, then?
A good friend of mine performed here and told me that, you know, it was a great little theater, and I actually had a couple little rewrites that the producers wanted me to change. So it's just great to be able to try out a couple of the little changes here and see how it works with the audiences.
All right. And Pauline, I'm sure you're thrilled to be able to debut your new lights with Jamaica Farewell.
Well, we are. And Mr. Fry was the Jack Freiberger introduced.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure. Deborah right.
So
he was just here a little while
ago.
That's
right. He'll be coming back in September.
Okay. Very good.
To do another run of his show. He's already booked 4 days in advance. We also have the fabulous, and none other than Fill the Void coming mm-hmm. back.
Very popular.
And one show is already sold out. Okay. We've only got two shows. So, you know, these reruns of The Fringe are pretty fantastic for us at the moment.
That's great. Well, congratulations on that. And, of course, you can get the whole schedule for Jamaica Farewell as well as other upcoming shows at indiefringe.org.
On our new website.
On your new website.
Completely revamped to include the theater, of course.
Okay.
So go on there and you can find all the information on every show.
And if people have trouble finding the building, how do you tell them to get there? Because it is a little tricky if you don't know that Mass Ave area. You're just slightly east of College.
East of College, and I say just go to the corner of, you know, Mass Ave where you hit College and St. Clair, and we're to the east behind the Scholars Inn parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
And there's plenty of parking there and it's all free.
Sort of a big white building and...
A former church, and mm-hmm. I was telling Deborah today that in 1927 it was built by the Missionary Bands of America, and their missionary outreach was to Jamaica.
Really?
And I had forgotten about that until the weekend, and I went, oh, now I remember the history of the building. So we felt that was fairly, you know, interesting.
Well, it all comes together. Deborah, I'm looking forward very much to seeing Jamaica Farewell. It sounds just like a great story.
Well, thank you so much. I'm very happy to be here. Love Indianapolis.
Travis DiNicola with Indie Fringe's Pauline Moffat and actress Deborah Earhart. Her one-woman autobiographical show, Jamaica Farewell, is being performed at the Indie Fringe Theater on East St. Clair Street through March 21st. For more information, visit IndieFringe.org. Again, IndieFringe.org. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
Indiana Historical Society spent 2009 preparing for the delivery of the much-anticipated Indiana Experience, designed to make the Eugene and Marilyn Glick Indiana History Center a destination. The grand reopening is March 20th, and Sharon Gamble invited the Indiana Historical Society's Director of Exhibit Development and Research, Eloise Scroggins, Director of Exhibit Design, Jeff Mills, and Media Relations Manager, Amy Lamb, to tell us about how the addition of more interactive and high-technology experiences will appeal to visitors.
All right, I know enough not to ask you guys what's new, because lots of things are new, but let's start with, any or all of you can answer this, where do you start when you're thinking about a renovation? Where do you start saying, well, here's what we need to do? Do you start with how the facility has served you so far, or what's the jumping in point?
Sure. Well, I think the biggest thing in our process was to talk about the programming, you know, what we wanted to offer, what we needed to offer, and then seeing how that fits in with our current building as it was. John Herbst, our CEO, brought in an architecture firm very early to take a look at what would be possible and what wouldn't be possible. And at the same time, our program staff was looking at what size of a space you would need for a You Are There program, what size of space you would need for Destination Indiana or the History Lab. So it's really important that we knew what we wanted to accomplish programmatically before we even thought about touching the building.
And then there's also the workflow of, well, who's likely to go to You Are There, and then what's their next step? What's the next thing they're going to do on that day when they visit that exhibit? How do you get your arms or minds around that?
Well, we've been offering exhibitions in the Indiana History Center for 10 years since the building was first opened, but they've been rather isolated in the Rapp Exhibition Gallery, which is kind of all the way down at the far end of the building, opposite of where you actually enter. So it's been a challenge for us over the last 10 years to develop exhibitions to make the building itself user-friendly enough to get people to feel comfortable coming all the way down to the exhibit gallery. And then everything that we offered was fairly self-contained in that one space. So one of the primary things we wanted to accomplish with this renovation is offering a much wider menu of options for people. People hopefully now will feel much freer to wander throughout the building because the public spaces are more spread out. So there's not this sense of one or two spaces you as the public are welcome into, but pretty much any of the spaces that you're going to pass are filled with things for you to do. And then there's a wide menu of different stories that we're telling inside each one. So to answer your question, you wouldn't be able to do all of the exhibitions in an hour like you could have before. There's just so many things for you to do. There are three separate You Are There experiences. There's the History Lab, the Investigation Stations, Destination Indiana. You could spend a half a day in. So just in terms of exhibitions alone, you could spend, easily several hours, depending on how deep you wanted to get into the experience.
Cool. And Eloise, how does your exhibit development and research department dovetail or complement Jeff's exhibit design department? How do you guys work? I'm picturing that neither of you can do anything without the other, that they're complementary skill sets.
That's absolutely true. For a while, we called ourselves the two-headed monster. and there's actually a third leg to our stool now. We have a director of interpretation who oversees all the live interpreters in the space. It is absolutely a three-pronged process. I do the research that contributes to the content of the space. So, for instance, in the 1924 Model T repair shop, we had to get started. We had to identify the photograph. We had to figure out what was going on in it. We had to identify the parts and pieces. And then we had to go find them. We had to make sure the individual objects that we were finding for the space were period correct and historically accurate. Then we move on. Research then kind of spreads out so that I start working with Dan, our manager of interpretation, to make sure that his characters are historically accurate as well, and the stories that they tell are rooted in the research. And we also start working with Jeff to make sure that everything he's building is accurate, not just to the photograph, because we have this great historical record at our fingertips that basically tells us what to build, but to make sure that research is informing the types of materials he's using, the types of finishes, the different color schemes and design. But then once it moves into a building process, Jeff is very sensitive to the research aspect of it.
And Jeff, how do you do you ever have to substitute something? Let's talk about something specific, like a finish or a material that maybe was around in 1920 something, but isn't around today.
We've run into that on several occasions. Most recent of which has been dealing with masonry inside of our spaces. The pictures show a brick wall in the photograph, but we don't want to have to build an entirely brick wall. So we've actually kind of turned that around, and we've been able to take advantage of some materials that we have now that reproduce material that they would have had to build a complete brick wall out of in the past. So we can use brick veneers, if you will, or we can use plastics, to reproduce glass in certain cases. Mm. But I think we actually it's a lot easier for us to reproduce what you're seeing in those photos than it would be to use the actual materials in a lot of cases, because you got to remember the exhibits are only up for 9 months mm-hmm. at a time, so we don't want to make the financial investment and the time investment in a lot of cases to use the traditional building techniques and materials and methods. So we find a way to represent it as closely as possible in terms of what the visitor experience will be, but that will allow us from a financial perspective to take it down in 9 months and only reuse portions of it.
That's quite a balancing act.
It is.
Do you have a storage facility that allows you to, because, somewhere down the road in 10 years, you're going to have another need for a brick, something that looks like a brick wall. Do you have storage space on site that allows you to kind of have a little warehouse where you can go for materials?
We do, and that's been a great improvement in our process. For years, we did not actually have much storage, but we've been allocated a large area that we were able to rotate things in and out of, and we've used that very to good effect so far.
We have. It is still a challenge. We primarily at the Historical Society collect two-dimensional objects. Our collection itself is a research collection. It's got photographs and journals and manuscripts, maps. We are not set up to collect Model T's, grocery counters. So it is an ongoing process since none of the You Are Theirs are permanent. We do have a plan that we're kind of working to finesse that will make it a more rotating collection system, if you will, for the exhibitions program. Those Model T's, you know, we bought them for the experience. We own them, but we will not be keeping them as a part of the collection after the experiences close.
You know, it is interesting because you're not a museum.
Right.
But some of the activities we've just been talking about are very museum-like.
Absolutely.
And I think the thing that we're really excited about with the NEI experience is that you won't get anything exactly like this any other place. We talk a lot about how the fact that we're artifact-free is very liberating for us. We have a lot more freedom to take an image, and you can make it into a walk-through space where the visitor will actually inhabit that area. You can take them on a touchscreen journey where they might come in contact with 100 images in 10 minutes, where it would have taken them hours to do that if they went up to our library and looked at them one by one. So really having that interaction, and then we've called it a boutique experience in the past. You know, you can have exactly the kind of experience that you want to. If you want to just walk into the spaces, take a look around, and then come back out, you can do that. If you want to sit there and talk with the interpreters for 20 minutes, you can do that. Same thing with taking that Destination Indiana journey. You can sit in front of the big screen and just enjoy something cinematic, or you can get hands-on. So the fact that we can use our information and our resources in so many different ways is really providing Indianapolis and Indiana with something very unique.
And you're not encumbered by the need to move people through the space in a super timely way. So if somebody mm-hmm. does want to drill down and remembers grandmother's stories of shopping at mm-hmm. that 1940-something mm-hmm. grocery store, that person can sit there and visit with the interpreter for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I had a chance before you closed for the renovation to have a little sneak preview of and Amy or Eloise or Jeff helped me with the names of these things. There was the place where you could look at the old photographs that were, you could sit and click through and look at mm-hmm. the old photos that are part of the Bass collection. What do you call that area?
That's Destination Indiana.
Destination mm-hmm. Indiana. Mm-hmm. And then the You Are There experience of the 1945 grocery
right.
store. There's the Model T repair shop, which is 1924.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a third.
There is. It's a 1914 violin maker's workshop.
Ooh.
Yeah. Joseph Conrath was a German immigrant. He was a violin maker who lived here in Indianapolis. And he had a small workshop, essentially, on the second floor of a building on 39 Virginia Avenue. The building is very interesting. It, you know, when you look in the city directories, he is one of many tenants in that building, a number of residences, but then also some other businesses are there in the building as well. There's a great photograph of Mr. Conrath and his wife standing on the front stoop of the building, and painted on the stairs going up, it says Conrath Violins Upstairs.
Mm.
And that's how he advertised himself. We have all these postcard advertisements from him in the collection that basically say 39 Virginia Avenue Upstairs. And so we've titled the experience You Are There 1914, The Violin Maker Upstairs. And it's very sweet. It's a much smaller, more intimate experience than the other two, because it historically was. But you come in and you have an opportunity to talk with Mr. Conrath about the type of violin you need made or repaired. And he, you know, the interpreters are really, they're trained to talk with you about whatever it is you're interested in talking about. If you want to ask him about the technique of making a violin, he can talk to you about that. If you want to talk to him about, you know, what his wife is going to cook for dinner. We actually this morning got a copy of their family's German recipe book.
Wow.
So it included, you know, and it's all in German, but
how
they've translated
it
for us. We have really been very lucky. We recently have been put in touch with a descendant of Mr. Conrath. Mr. Conrath himself had no children, so we had really not found anyone. But lo and behold, through the International Violin Competition, we were put in touch with this gentleman who was a descendant of the family and is very history-minded. He's a genealogist. His mother, actually, interestingly enough, was a member of our organization. And we put them to work at really ironing out what their family history was, specifically honing in on 1914, so that they could give us anything that would help us create these characters and literally place them on September 8th, 1914.
Hmm.
And it's magic. We were in training all morning this morning with the interpreters and the family, and together crafting what Mr. Conrath's life was like in 1914. It was pretty magical.
So I have to ask, I mean, Jeff, with your background and your skill set, I'm sure you would love to build anything and try to figure out how to make any exhibition look like a period piece and serve the needs of the Historical Society and the History Center. And the available history is so rich. How did you guys hone in on the 1945 grocery, the 1914 violin shop, and the 1924 Model T?
It's quite a process. Excuse me. I mean, when we originally started looking at the photos, I think we had over 100 possible images to choose from, and it took us quite a while to drill down on, I think, ultimately 12, and then we decided, you know, with the four that we wanted to go with in the next couple of years. There's a lot of considerations that we have to look at once we're deciding that, and a lot of it has to do with space, for one. And do we want to do an interior or an exterior? You know, I don't know if I can talk about the Speedway, but, you know, we have a Speedway you are there in the works as well.
Oh, my.
And that's going to present a whole new set of challenges because
sure.
that will be outside. So that's going to open up, and then we're doing the Robert Robert Kennedy speech. That's outside, too. So those are going to be taking things to a new level for us. So I think with the first ones, we decided to go with interiors to kind of cut our teeth on those, to get used to the process, to get and decide the best way to get these done, because each one of them presents some original challenges and unique opportunities. And one of those things was the balance between using natural light and electrical light, because in a lot of these spaces, you know, they didn't have a lot of internal artificial light. And people are used to walking into spaces and having all the light very handled and managed. And so that's something we have to talk about. And we have to talk about, you know, safety concerns as well, like in the butcher shop and the grocery store. So these are things we all have to navigate through. And everything has to be balanced against what is the visitor experience.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the final, you know, whether it's hard for me or difficult for me to design or whether it's hard for Eloise to find the research, that really doesn't matter as much as what is the end result for the user. And we end up having to manage all of our needs in that balance.
I have a really pragmatic question. How did you get, or how will you get, the Model T in the building?
We already did.
Yeah. Did you have to disassemble it?
No.
I've walked down your halls. I'm trying to picture.
It was a tight fit.
Yes. One of the Model Ts actually came from right here in Indianapolis. It was built by a gentleman who loves Model Ts, who lives up in Broad Ripple. And I couldn't believe it, but we found it, and he, you know, has worked with us extensively on the project. But he drove the Model T down from his house in Broad Ripple and straight up into our loading dock. And then we had to navigate it down the hallway, which, you're right, was a challenge, but. But it's in and placed and ready to go.
Well, you know, it strikes me that the three of you know a lot about the inside of Indianapolis, not just the public history, but just all the research and all of the behind-the-scenes connections that you've made. There's some other program you can offer there. I don't know what it is, but you know everybody by the end of a project like this.
We try, because it's through those connections that we find people. You know, it's such a small world. I couldn't believe it when our friends at the International Violin Competition found the descendant of Mr. Conrath, and lo and behold, this gentleman is very good friends with Kenny, the guy who built the Model T and drove it down to the Historical Society.
Kidding.
No. And in fact, when we first started talking with the Conrath family, you know, he said, gosh, I've got a friend who's going to love your Model T project. You should tell him about it. And,
no.
And then we started talking, and he said, I think you might, you know, we might be talking about the same person. So it is a very small world, and, you know, we make great use of our contacts at museums and the archives all over the city and all over mm-hmm. the state. But then, you know, to put on an exhibition like this, you really have to reach much wider as well to you know, the hobbyists and the collectors, you know, and just the people who have such a passion for the subject matter but aren't necessarily affiliated with it professionally. But they're the ones that are helping us make this stuff come to life.
Eloise and I were actually just talking about that, I think, yesterday, and mm-hmm. we were contrasting how we used to do exhibits to this process,
right.
And how really we could not do what we're doing with You Are Theirs without the community input, and without it's a collaborative experience, and we learn so much more because of that.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, things like the Conrath family. I mean, there are experiences and information that we would never have been able to find out without that kind of an outreach, and it's really a rewarding experience in that process.
The Model T shop has been amazing. You know, that's a photograph that comes from Blackford County. It's a photograph that comes to us with almost no provenance. We knew almost nothing about it. And so we contacted the group up at Blackford County Historical Society and came up there, showed them our photograph, and talked through our project. And they said, well, okay, give us a little while to take a look at this. And the next time a group from the Historical Society went up there a couple months after that, we thought we were going up to meet with the staff of the Historical Society. And we walked in, and lo and behold, they had the whole town there. There were probably 30 people in the room, but it was the relatives, the son of the mechanic who'd worked in the space, who literally was able to tell us everything about his father and, you know, where he had trained, what he wore to work, what his favorite foods were. You know, they pulled together people, you know, who were in their, you know, just past 100 years old, who had shopped in the district where our store was. Jeff's right. We couldn't do this. I mean, we can do the research into the materials and the building and the props, but you can't tell those kinds of personal stories without the input of the people most closely to them. And it just makes for a really rich experience.
So, Amy, you're fond of saying this, and it's worth reiterating right now, in this age of instant communication, where nobody saves old emails unless they need an electronic paper trail, don't throw away. Don't think twice before you throw away your family's history.
Absolutely. And, you know, the Indiana Historical Society is one of those places. Let's say you have something from a grandmother or a great-grandmother, and you don't know what to do with it. You know that your kids aren't going to want it. Consider the IHS as a place where you can find a steward for those materials, because, you know, a lot of the things that we have in our collection are not famous people. They're not especially important people in the way that the world thinks about it, but each story is important to the history of the state. So we are always interested in helping people preserve and then in turn sharing that past.
Sharon Gamble with the Indiana Historical Society's Director of Exhibit Development and Research, Eloise Scroggins, Director of Exhibit Design, Jeff Mills, and Media Relations Manager, Amy Lamb. The Indiana History Center's grand reopening is March 20th, and you can learn lots more and even see a video at indianahistory.org. Again, indianahistory.org. Of the calendar to you, Sharon O'Gamble. Looks like you got a leprechaun in your pocket and a pot of gold at the end of your rainbow.
Only because they have red hair and freckles. Typecasting.
And you can call me Travis O'Dinicola today. Well, at least for this week. Because we're going to look at some Irish
Why?
Things.
Why? Because there's beer in your hand? That would be different.
Nothing to
how?
Do with it at all.
Oh.
And we'll talk about that and more on our calendar we call.
What will we do? O-do. O-do and McDo. Bagpipe free edition? I don't know.
I don't know.
No offense to bagpipers. Mm-hmm. I have tried to play bagpipes myself. It's kind of disturbing. My first item has nothing to do with St. Patrick's Day, but everything to do with great theater and an amazing performance by Millicent Wright in a one-woman show at the IRT. Yes, the Going Solo Festival is mostly over, but IRT's Pretty Fire, starring Millicent Wright, has been extended for additional performances. You can go see this splendid, many, many character show about as their materials say, the simple pleasures, the fears, and the quiet wonders of growing up African-American in the United States. You can see it Friday, March 19th at 7:30, Saturday the 20th at 5, and Sunday the 21st at 2. So go see it at the IRT.
There you go. Well, I could probably fill an entire calendar with all the Irish type of events
that
are going on.
All the Irish
I'm not going to do that. What I'm actually going to do is I'm just going to send you the Irish Fest doesn't actually take place until September 17th through the 19th. That's a ways away.
Mm-hmm.
But they are already thinking, of course, about
Irish things. And so for St. Patrick's Day, they have put together a phenomenal calendar on their website. If you go to IndieIrishFest.com, and it has listings and listings of everything from the church services to all the great different musicians playing everywhere, from down on the canal, down at the city market, at the Golden Ace. There are performances going on all week long, not just on St. Patty's Day. So definitely go check that out. If you're looking for something to do this week that's St. Patty's Day Irish related, check out IndieIrishFest.com.
Fantastic. There's nothing Irish on this music program that I'm about to tell you about, I don't think. I'm pretty sure Mark Fabrizi doesn't have any Irish blood, but he is the 1990 silver medalist of the International Violin Competition of Indianapolis, and he is coming back as part of a chamber music series for a concert on Sunday, the 21st at 2:30 at the Basile Theater at the Glick Indiana History Center, which will be newly reopened by then. And he will be joined by the Indiana University Violin Virtuosi for a program that includes works by Tartini, Vivaldi, Brahms, Fritz Kreisler, and William Harvey, who lived for good long time in Indianapolis. Yep. More information at violin.org.
Well, once you get your shamrock on, then and want to look maybe for some other type of music after the Irish is over, then there's some great jazz that's coming up in the next couple weeks at the Jazz Kitchen. I mean,
I'm
they
so
always
excited
have
about this.
Great jazz at the Jazz Kitchen. But I'm really excited about next weekend, on Friday and Saturday, performances at both 8 and 10. So a total of four performances. The Basile Walrab Jazz Orchestra is going to be playing the music of Miles Davis's album, The Birth of Cool. And in fact, next week I'm going to have on the Art of the Matter an interview with Mark Baselli about this concert. But let me just say, get your tickets now. Go to thejazzkitchen.com, get more information there. And then a couple days after that, on the 24th of March, there's a big concert starting at 7 o'clock that is celebrating women in jazz. It's part of Women's History Month, and there's going to be a I'm not going to say a ton because it's not reflecting on the weight, but just the quantity. A lot of great women. I should stop talking now.
Bevy.
Brenda Williams, Cynthia Lane, Heather Ramsey, Shannon Forsell, Stacey Sandoval, Janice Jaffe, Jennifer Kirk, Monica Herzig, Carolyn Dudden, Sean Goodman. Great women, jazz musicians, all playing, starting at 7 o'clock on Wednesday the 24th at the Jazz Kitchen.
Don't worry, folks. Travis has both a wife and a radio partner who understand his good intent.
Thanks.
He's too far away to punch. Hey, I just realized I do have something green, although maybe not in the sense that you started the calendar. There's this awesome exhibit going on at the Morris Butler House. It's something Historic Landmarks Foundation has helped to organize. It's called Naturally Victorian. What's green about that? Well, it shows some, maybe to our modern minds, surprising ways that folks more than a century ago got things clean around the house, kept food cold before electricity. In other words, how they lived good, clean, green lives in the Victorian era. And you'll actually hear more about that on next week's Art of the Matter. But the exhibit is open right now, and it's very cool. Very cool, and you can discover some new low-tech ways to keep your life in order.
Last thing that I have for the calendar this week, I seem to be very music-focused this week. This concert sounds like so much fun. The ISO is performing the music of Pink Floyd. That's right. Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra is going to be playing Money and Wish You Were Here, Another Brick in the Wall, Is There Anybody Out There? It's all part of a special event concert on March 20th. So Pink Floyd being played by the ISO.
And that's not green, but it's still cool.
Thank you.
If you're a green actor, that is to say you're kind of new to acting, you might want to take advantage of beginners and intermediate Monday evening acting classes, which start this coming Monday the 15th, and they're offered by Stage Actors Workshop. You can find out more by dropping an email to SAW, that stands for Stage Actors Workshop, @yahoo.com. Don't type out underscore. It's SAW_THEATER@yahoo.com and find out about their acting classes.
Sharon, I wish you a happy St. Patrick's Day.
And the same to you. May the road rise up to greet you. How does the rest of this go? The wind be always at your back?
The wind be always at your back and your Guinness glass full. There you go.
I like it.
Happy St. Patty's Day. We'll be back next week with more of
What'll We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on wfyi.org.
The 52nd Annual Indiana Flower and Patio Show has a novel idea this year. All the gardens are based on books. Our own book lover, Travis DiNicola, dug up more from Donnell Heberer-Walton, Executive Director of HSI Show Productions, Inc., the Indianapolis-based producer of the Indiana Flower and Patio Show, and Cheryl Jacques, a landscape designer with Brouwer Jacques Design of Greenfield and author of The Magnolia Principle.
Cheryl, Donnell, welcome to Art of Matter. Great to see you here in our studio. I know you're awfully busy, so I do appreciate you being here today.
Thank you very
much. So nice to be here.
Well, I want to start with Donnell. You've been on Art of the Matter before, talking about Flower and Patio Show.
Yeah.
And just briefly, give us a rundown as far as what it is. It's the 52nd annual. It's the original. It's at the State Fairgrounds. I can't wait.
Well, I can't either. I mean, watching these gardens come together this year especially has been incredible. We have a lot of new and interesting and exciting gardens this year. The theme of this year's show is a novel idea. So we have a book theme working, which people are very excited about. We have 29 gardens this year, bigger and better than ever. Actually, there is more square footage of gardens this year than we've had in the 10 years I've been involved. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Now, all the people who are creating them, they're professional exterior designers, builders.
Landscape architects. Landscape contractors. Anyone, everyone in between. And, you know, it's interesting you mentioned that because there are a lot of architectural details at the show this year, mm-hmm. more than any, again, it hasn't all come to fruition yet, but there are so many there's so much attention to detail this year. I cannot wait to see it finished.
Right. And I'll mention that we are recording this ahead of time.
Yes.
If you're listening Friday night, the show opens tomorrow. If you're listening on Saturday afternoon, the show has just opened.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
So, yeah, but I know you guys are crazy busy now.
We are.
Give me just an idea as far as some of the book themes. I mean, because they're really cool, what I've read about, and I'm just imagining what they're going to look like.
They are. We have everything from Alice in Wonderland, which, of mm-hmm. course, just was released in the movie theater. And we actually have a Robin Hood, too, which
okay.
I just heard
that's
the movie coming
soon.
Out as
mm-hmm.
well. We have A River Runs Through It, Call of the Wild, Somewhere in Time, you name it. I mean, it just runs the gamut of
okay,
of
so
novel.
Tell me about The River Runs Through It. Is there a river running through it, and can you fish in it?
There is. Actually, one of the new focuses of this year's show, and this is something we've been working on for years,
mm-hmm.
we actually have a stream or a small river that runs through 5 separate gardens this year.
Oh, cool.
So
okay.
the south end of the building is mm-hmm. all raised 2 to 3 feet up in the air, and there is a stream, and you have to cross bridges and cross over the stream to actually get to all of the gardens. So
okay.
that's new this year, and that area is just fantastic. Absolutely
wow.
fantastic.
Now, do you have a, I know you maybe don't have a favorite, you can't say, but is there one garden you've seen so far that they're building where it really just captures the spirit of a book?
Well, the Huckleberry Finn, which is where
yeah.
it opens the stream, and that's where the stream flows into the fishing hole.
Very neat. Okay.
So, and there's a lot of statues that he has. Actually, they're still covered, but I know. And actually, the Alice in Wonderland, they have a giant papier-mâché tree that an artist built for them.
Hmm.
And again, it's covered in plastic, and I haven't seen it yet.
Right.
But it should be. There's a Cheshire Cat, from what I understand, so I'm
very
looking
cool.
forward to that.
Very cool. Now, all the people that have the exhibits there, they can be contracted. They can be contacted. There's also things you can purchase there.
Absolutely. The
mm-hmm.
showcase garden area is the center of the show.
Yeah.
And everyone there, they're all competing for the same business.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the people who you can hire to install, do huge landscape projects or very small landscape projects. We also have exhibitors in exhibit space we have deck builders, fence builders, people who do sunrooms, and everything in between. So anything
sure.
that you would like to use to improve your finer outdoor living, you will find at the Indiana Flower and Patio Show.
Very cool. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, Cheryl, you're a designer and also an author now. And if I got this right, the timing sort of worked out perfectly for you, right? Because
yeah.
you were finishing up a book or trying to finish it up. And
yeah. Last year we had a garden, and mm-hmm. when we were done, of course, we chat with Donnell, and we said, what's the theme for this next year? And she said, a novel idea. And I said, well, that the timing couldn't be better for that, because I'm actually in the process of writing a book, and I've been working on it for quite some time, and this would be the impetus to finish it in time for the Flower and Patio show.
That's excellent. So you get to release it there. And the book is titled The Magnolia Principle, correct?
Yeah, it's called The Magnolia Principle, and it's based on, believe it or not, some of my experiences from hearing the commentary from some of the people that walk through the Flower and Patio show. You know, of course, you've constructed this beautiful garden, and you're listening to people comment about the trees or the paving and the ambiance that you've created. And the title embodies sort of the perception that people have when they walk through nature. Half my clients or the people that would walk through a booth would say, you know, I love magnolia trees. They're beautiful. I look forward to their, you know, blossoms in the spring. But the other half might say, oh, well, you know, what a disappointment if you get that late season frost, all the petals fall off. So do you see possible joy or potential disappointment? So in the book, it explores little quirks that maybe a first-time gardener would have when they're trying to think about the process of gardening.
Sure.
And it explores those different kinds of thought processes about nature.
And that's a really interesting idea because, I mean, of course, with any garden and any landscaping, you're going to have both success and disappointment, and I mean, even just the natural process is that thing, you know, not everything's in bloom at the same time, and when some things are blooming, other things are dying, right?
Exactly, but you'd be surprised at how many people would say, you know, I don't want a magnolia tree in my yard because that's a possible disappointment. But as you said, plants die, things need trimmed, there are maintenance issues involved with your garden, and how you overcome your perceptions. So this book is more of a why do you want a garden book as opposed to a how-to garden book.
Yeah.
There are millions of books written about, oh, that you use a particular type of soil, you amend things properly, you know, you look for sunny and shady locations. Those are obvious things that you have to work towards, but maybe you should change your perception about gardening and what constitutes a weed or what is a weedy appearance, and maybe you're just being
too
controlling.
And I've always thought that, you know, a weed is something that is just misunderstood, you know?
You know what? And you know,
of course, I always used to say that when my mom asked me to weed or my wife asked me to weed now or something.
That's true. But Emerson once said, a weed is a plant whose virtues have yet to be discovered.
See, I think that's absolutely fine. And there's some, you know, I know there's certainly a lot of talk about, you know, what's invasive and what's not, and what's, you know, indigenous to the area and what is not. And certainly you need to take those things in consideration. But I'd like a little bit of just a natural overflow sometimes.
Yeah.
You know,
and,
in my garden.
Can't you tell a lot about someone's, their personality by the types of plants that grow in their yard?
Yes.
I think that's another thing that you cover in your
sure.
book.
Yes.
From what I understand is I'm a huge gardener, and there are things, and I am one of those people that I do have magnolias because so what if a frost comes? Even if I got to enjoy it one spring out of every five, it's worth it to have it in my yard because when you see those magnolias pop, it is, oh, it's just heaven. It is heaven, and it brings a big smile to your face.
Very fun. Now, Cheryl, you're with Brouwer Jack Design, and now do you have a garden showcase this year as well?
We do, and believe it or not, we have four gorgeous magnolia trees, and I'm waiting to see if they're going to pop. But if they don't, you know, the structure of the plant is beautiful. We've also
Now, is your theme your own book? Were you allowed to do that?
Yeah, that's
okay,
the whole point. The theme of our garden is our book. So
that's very cool. I wasn't sure if you you had to
pick actually, she's garden number one. The first one you see when you come in the north lobby of the West Pavilion because it is her book. I mean,
wow. So you got a little bit of an advantage here, you know, because not every landscape designer has, you know, got their own book to
That's
work
right.
on here.
None of them do, other than Cheryl.
And we're actually hopeful to have someone reciting poetry because there's also quite a bit of poetry in the book. As if the plants were speaking to you. So if the plants could talk, what might they say in terms of their care?
Very neat. Very neat. You know, it's so timely, of course. I mean, I was just, you know, last weekend when the weather finally got good and the snow melted, it was so much more of a dramatic difference, it seemed, than the past few years where we haven't necessarily had a whole lot of snow. And you sort of see, you know, your garden come in the spring. And this year I looked at, you know, the backyard, first time I've seen it, felt like in months. And it's like, wow, we've got a lot to do. Can't wait to get to the, you know, the flower show to make sure we get some good ideas for this year.
Yeah, and you know what? 95% of the people who come to the show to get ideas and things to do in their own yard. And that's I have so many friends who say, I can't wait for your show, I can't wait for the show, because it is. It's too wet to do anything outside, and it's too early to really do anything yet.
Yeah.
So it's nice to be able to come to the state fairgrounds and to walk into the gardens and just get the little taste of spring before it actually springs.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah. And one thing that I do want to mention, in my other role, I'm not co-hosting the Art of the Matter. I'm the director of Indie Reads.
That's right.
And the Flower and Patio Show has in your generosity, you're going to have actually places where people can drop off books that will then be donated to Indie Reads for Indie Reads students
to use. That's exactly right. In each of the lobbies, as you come into the show, there will be big donation boxes. So bring whatever books you have that you need, because obviously Indie Reads is a great, it's a great project. So
we're
thrilled to be able to help in this very small way we're trying to help.
Our students and their families will appreciate those book donations as well. But it's just a nice way to tie into the whole novel theme.
Absolutely.
This year. I am looking forward to it very much. And wish you both the best of luck. Danielle, you'll have your, I'm sorry, Cheryl, you'll have your book available for sale
at
the show as well?
I'll have them there, and I also have some book signings Saturday the 13th from 4 to 6, Sunday from 3 to 5, and then the following Saturday, March 20th, 4 to 6, and March 21st, 3 to 5. And I'm also giving a presentation about the book. I'm going to throw up pictures of plant material and just give almost like a horticultural inkblot test. What do you think of this plant? And how can you overcome your neuroses about it, possibly, or just enjoy the process of gardening more?
Excellent. Very good. Well, Cheryl, Danielle, it's great to see you both again, and
thanks
so much.
Thank you for having us.
Travis D. Nicola with author and landscape designer Cheryl Jacques and Danielle Heberer-Walton of the Indiana Flower and Patio Show. The show takes place at the State Fairgrounds from March 13th through the 21st. More information can be found at IndianaFlowerAndPatioShow.com. IndianaFlowerAndPatioShow.com.
Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Baselli Wallrap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com. You start with that.
Show close in 3, 2, 1. Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4. I'll find out what is naturally green at the Morris Butler House.
I'll talk with Mark Baselli about his take on Miles Davis.
And I'll preview an upcoming American Pianists Association concert. And, of course, we'll have our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? So please listen next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4 for The Art of the Matter here on WFYI for your information.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support from listeners like you, and from the Palladium at the Center for the Performing Arts, opening in January 2011. The Art of the Matter. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's Art of the Matter was produced and edited by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter on 90.1 FM, Indianapolis.